Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Hello, hi, and welcome. I am your host, Emma Gunnar-Wardner, and in my nearly 20-year career as a beauty and health writer, I have interviewed a lot of people. Supermodels, entrepreneurs, authors, celebrities, and doctors. And many of these conversations had a real impact on me, and I'd come away feeling inspired, excited, informed, and really empowered. And at the back of my mind, I'd always think, I wish I could just publish the tape so people could really feel that conversation. Well, on this podcast, you get to feel the conversation. I talk with experts, guests, and a few friends who I hope will inspire, inform, and empower you, and maybe also challenge you, whether you're looking for self-help, self-improvement, beauty advice, health insights, business know-how, or just some good old-fashioned life advice and a bit of a laugh. It's all here. Welcome to the show. Dr. Louise Newson joins me on this episode, and it's a conversation that's going to centre around a topic that I know is close to a lot of listeners' hearts. It's something that's come up time and time again in the Facebook group, and there have also been requests for me to have Louise on the podcast, so hopefully this will not only answer a lot of your questions, but you'll also be very pleased to see that Louise is joining me on the show. We're going to be talking about the menopause, but perhaps more specifically, the perimenopause. It's a bit of a myth that one day you wake up in menopause. The reality is that you can experience the hormonal changes, perimenopause, for years. And that's what Louise and I discuss in terms of how to understand it and how to manage it. Given that every woman will go through this, it has always really surprised and disappointed me how vague the information out there can be on this subject, and also how a visit to your GP with symptoms can sometimes lead to an incorrect diagnosis of depression, for example. There's also a lot of conflicting information and misinformation out there that all results in women not knowing what to do, who to trust, or where to go to get help. In this episode, Louise, who is a GP and menopause specialist, shares her expertise and also her own experiences to help guide women towards their best health. During this conversation, we discuss hormone therapies and the differences between synthetic, bioidentical, and body identical hormones, the telltale signs you're experiencing perimenopausal symptoms, how to speak to your doctor to get help, the help you need, and the reported risks of breast cancer and hormone therapies, the role weight plays, and so much more. All the links to Louise and the resources she references will be in the show notes, but without any further ado, it's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Louise Newson onto The Emma Gunn Show. Dr. Louise Newson, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
It's a pleasure to speak to you. And actually, I have covered hormones on the podcast many times in the past. And it's a subject that I think, well, there's a lot of confusion. Mm-hmm. And I think there still feels as though, even though you can put resources out there, I don't know if you feel like this, you can put resources out there, there's still a lot of questioning. The resources can sometimes be hard to find for women. And I was really reminded of this recently. My good friend Caroline Hirons broke a hormone clinic in London because she mentioned them because she did a live talking about her hormone issues and the demand from followers saying, I really need this information too, and I'm struggling to find it, really made me think, okay, I need to make sure I'm putting more of these resources out there. This is your job. So do you find that
that's something you come up against time and time again.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm a GP, I'm not a gynecologist, I'm a physician. So I'm very interested in the long-term health risks of not having hormones, as well as symptoms. Obviously, I want to help people feel better too. But it's amazing how little information is out there. And the information that is often biased, it's funded, it's there's sponsorship behind it, there's a hidden agenda. So I feel it really frustrating and really sad that it's, the menopause and the perimenopause are natural processes, but we will all go through them as women if we live long enough. And a lot of women go through them early for various reasons. So, there are perimenopausal, menopausal women out there in their teens, in their 20s, in their 30s. And obviously, as we get older, it's more common, yet it's still not spoken about. And if it is, it's often with wrong information. So there's a lot of scaremongering and a lot of uncertainty out there. And, you know, it makes me feel really sad because women shouldn't be made to have to struggle to have a better quality of life and a better quantity of life as well. So, yes, there's a huge amount that needs to be done.
And I think that's what it seems to come down to time and time again, is the quality of life issue. And I also think one of the things I want to really focus on in this conversation with you is perimenopause, because I think there is this misconception that menopause is jumping off a cliff.
Yes.
You get to the edge and then away you go. And it's not actually like that. That like there it's there can be a really long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Changes.
Yeah, I mean, if you break it down, if you, before thinking about perimenopause, if you think about menopause, if you break down the word, meno is menstrual cycle, so woman's periods, pause is stop. So for an official diagnosis, if you like, a woman has to have not had her period for at least a year. But for most of us, the menopause occurs as, like I say, a natural process. Our ovaries stop producing eggs because they've run out. The associated hormones decline. But that doesn't happen overnight, unless, obviously, your ovaries are taken out with an operation. So they decline gradually. And when they decline, people start to get symptoms because of the low hormone effects. But they're still having periods, although their periods often change in nature or frequency. And so this is called the perimenopause. And it can last sometimes for many years. And it's not often until people feel better when they're having their hormones replaced that they go, gosh, I haven't felt this good for 8 years, 10 years, you know. So the average age of the menopause in the UK is 51. So a lot of women in their 40s are perimenopausal, but because they're still getting periods, why would they think it's related to their menopause? And when you Google menopause, it's all about your period stopping. So there's not enough information about the perimenopause because, you know, we know that when your hormones start to reduce, symptoms can occur, and we can talk about these because they can occur in so many different systems of our body. But also we have cells that respond to the hormones all over our bodies. So we have health risks by having low hormone levels. So the best time to consider treatment and lifestyle options is when you're perimenopausal.
So would you just assume if you're in your 40s that you're probably already perimenopausal and should be thinking, or at least be aware?
I think the most important thing is, it's not even waiting till you're in your 40s. Every woman and men, because men know women too, they've all got mothers and a lot of them have got friends and sisters who are female, to know about it. You know, it's really important because these symptoms come on very gradually often, and we're all busy, we've all pushed in other directions, and we're juggling lots of things. So it's very easy to misinterpret, you know, the mood swings, the irritability, the poor sleep, the brain fog, the loss of concentration, you know, poor memory, because you think it's because you're getting older, because you're pulled in more directions than you were when you're in your 30s or 10 years before. So it's key that we're primed, because if any of you who are listening have experienced menopausal symptoms, it's very hard for your brain to function when you haven't got enough hormones. And I found it incredibly difficult when I had some symptoms. So actually then to find out information is that much harder. It's so much better to learn before. So then you're primed. And then when you get symptoms, you can then find out what's right for you and what works for you, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, and there's also an accessibility issue, because a friend of mine said to me a few years ago, because also I had a very turbulent time in my teens because of PCOS. My hormones were all over the place. When we'll come onto that later, because I want to ask about PCOS and then how you experience the menopause. But she said, Emma, honestly, the thing I would recommend for you is you get yourself a hormone doctor and you have them hold your hand for the next 15 years and you stay in touch with them and you get regular tests, because that's how you're going to sort of glide swan-like through this experience. do you think there's an element of truth in that? Obviously, accessibility to an expert and a doctor.
Yes, no. But actually, you know, it's actually for most people, it's very straightforward, and it's really important that we're not getting tests. A lot of people want to have their hormones tested, but if I tested your hormones on 5 different days, I would get 5 different results because they change all the time, and so then you can get falsely worried or falsely reassured. So a lot of women out there are having tests either privately or on the NHS and being told that their hormone levels are normal, yet they're experiencing symptoms, their periods are changing. It's usually a clinical diagnosis, not a biochemical diagnosis. So we don't need a blood test. So what people do need to know is the information. And, you know, doing a symptom questionnaire regularly is probably the best way of doing it. So on my website, if you just search questionnaire, you can see the questionnaire. That's a validated menopause questionnaire that we use in my clinic a lot, or the app that I'm developing. There's the questionnaires on there, and it's actually worth doing it every 3-6 months. And I wish I'd done it a few years ago, because I had no idea I was perimenopausal.
Really?
It was when I was writing my website. I was working incredibly hard, juggling the clinic, juggling life, juggling my 3 children, and then writing this website, which I wanted to provide evidence-based and unbiased information to women. So I was working really hard, but I felt exhausted, and I was very, very irritable, very cross, everything. I just hated life. And and I was also, I do a lot of yoga, so my yoga practice was really bad. My joints were stiff, my muscles were sore, my motivation had gone. I kept waking in the night. And this is really embarrassing. I had night sweats, and I had to keep waking up and putting a towel down because I didn't want to wake my husband, who would have gone mad if I'd woken him in the night. And I, as a doctor, thought I had lymphoma, which is a type of cancer, because you always think you have something bad when you're medical. I had no idea that it was a night sweat associated with my perimenopausal symptoms. Even though I'm writing day in, day out, and I'm lecturing people, you know, women and also healthcare professionals, to think about the other symptoms, I was getting back-to-back migraines and just feeling awful. And it was only after a few months, my daughter, who's now 15, but she was 11 at the time, said to me, "Mummy, I think you need your period because you're so cross and you're like some of my friends before they have their period." To which I just said, "Oh my goodness, Sophie, I'm menopausal." I said, "All these symptoms, they just fit into place, and I haven't had a period for about 3 months." And it was just then the penny dropped, and I thought, "Do you know what? I've wasted the last 3 months. I've been really struggling to work. You know, I've been trying to remember doses of antibiotics and painkillers that I've prescribed for decades as a doctor. You know, everything was hard, and I just thought it was because I was pushing myself too hard. Whereas if I had sensibly filled out a questionnaire, repeated it, even tracked my periods on an app, then I would have known. But I only had symptoms for a few months. I see women and speak to women who have symptoms for years, sometimes decades. And these are women who often have given up their jobs. They've given up their partners sometimes, and their lives are awful. And I can see how it would have happened if I hadn't seek the right help. So for me, actually going to a hormone specialist for years wouldn't have helped. What I needed was just some very freely available information landing on me, reminding me, fill out the questionnaire, you know, have you thought it might be related to your hormones? And, you know,
we'll come back to the action points, like what do you do when you realize that, and what the action you took. But what I hope listeners will actually get from that story is that you are a GP and you're a menopause specialist, and it not passed you by, but even you weren't kind of acutely in tune to it. So anyone listening to this who maybe feels that, again, like you did, "Oh, I can't believe I've lost 3 months." It's okay. It's okay.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, lots of symptoms, you know, can be due to life. You know, there are people that are depressed. There are people that have fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, migraines, you know, all sorts of things. But actually, you just sometimes need to take a step back, or someone else, one of your friends, one of your relatives, to say, look, you've really changed. Is there a reason for this? And it's the effect of hormones on our brains, which are the most significant, because a lot of women can cope with flushes and sweats. Sometimes they can be really debilitating, but it's the loss of control of your brain. It's really hard. You know, we see so many women who think they've got dementia, and I can understand it. They can't remember names. They can't remember words. And if you can't remember, someone was saying to me yesterday that she couldn't remember the name for the word banana. So she was trying to describe something yellow that's curved that you eat. And this name recall is really a real problem often, because we don't have the estrogen in our brains during this time. And it's quite funny if you can't remember something like that, but it's not so funny if you're in a board meeting, or you're, you know, presenting at work, or you're, you know, you want to be promoted. You know, a lot of us have worked really hard in our careers, and you don't want to just give it all up because your brain doesn't work.
Yeah, and usually it is in your 40s that you've reached that position, probably in work, where you are overloaded. You might have family life as well. And therefore, again, like you did, you think it's a combination of stress and just doing too much.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just before lockdown, actually, I was presenting down in London for a big company. I was just talking about menopause, and someone in the audience started crying. And often people do cry because it's very emotional when you realise what's going on. And this lady said for 10 years, she had been experiencing symptoms such as fatigue, memory problems, anxiety, poor sleep, very stressed, very worried, headaches. And 10 years ago, she had become promoted at work, very senior position. And she was young, she was only in her 40s. And so she had always thought it was due to her promotion. But hearing me talk made her realise that her last menstrual period was 10 years ago. And actually, I since spoke to her at another event that I did just via Zoom, because it was in lockdown a few weeks ago. And she said, my life's transformed. I'm now on HRT and it's incredible. But then she's sad because she's missed a decade of, you know, of how she sees now how she could have been for 10 years. But it's very easy to blame other things. And I think as women, we're very used to just getting on with things. And because the menopause isn't a medical condition, a lot of people feel it's wasting a doctor's time or a healthcare professional's time by going to talk. It seems a bit trivial. And a lot of people think hormonal women, it's a bit, we sort of laugh, they're a butt of jokes, aren't they? And if you are hormonal, it's not a joke. Anybody who's listening who's experienced PMS or menopausal symptoms, it can be really isolating, because you don't know where to go for help, and the help you receive can be confused, muddled, you know, and then you've lost your self-esteem, you've lost self-worth. It's a really weird time for a lot of people.
So when you, talking of intervention, you mentioned HRT as well. When you join the dots, yes. What were you able to do, and how did you go about managing it?
Well, again, it's an interesting thing, really, because obviously once I realised, I thought, right, I need HRT. I need to replace these hormones. One of the things I very much worry about is developing osteoporosis, and women who have low hormone levels have an increased risk of various conditions such as heart disease, diabetes, obesity, depression, osteoporosis, and also dementia. So all these things, I don't really want them. I've worked hard. I have a healthy lifestyle and I want to keep healthy. So I thought, right, I need HRT, but sadly, my GP surgery where I'm registered, most of the doctors there are very anti-HRT. So I knew I wouldn't be able to get it from them. And then that put me in that whole thing, well, what do I do? I have to go privately. And there's a lot of private clinics, as I'm sure you know, who offer compounded bioidentical HRT, which is frightfully expensive, and it's not licensed or regulated. So I'm very fortunate that one of my colleagues, Nick Panay in London, like me, runs a private clinic, because there isn't enough resources in the NHS to do NHS menopause work. But I phoned up his secretary and she said, no, he hasn't got an appointment for 6 months. And to which I was very rude and said, do you know who I am? I can't wait 6 months. And I realise now, and I always say to my staff, menopause women are very angry and they want, you know, it's really funny. So I was very rude to her. So don't worry, I'm going to email him. Forget it. You've been no help whatsoever.
So I applaud you for admitting that, Louise.
Yeah, I have apologised to her since. So then I emailed lovely Nick and said, look, I think I really need some help. And he said, let's speak on the phone. And it was funny, actually. I was in London with my daughter and my phone consultation was at 9. And at 10 to 9, I said to my daughter, Jessica, 10 minutes time, I've got to make this really important phone call. So just, you know, be quiet. And yeah, fine. Anyway, 9:05, Nick phones me and says, Louise, were you going to phone me? And I said, oh, my God, I completely forgotten. And that's how bad my memory was. You know, I can't imagine doing that now because my brain's obviously working fine. But anyway, so he gave me HRT and the dose has been altered. The type I've had has changed over the years. And now I can get it from my GP, which is fine. But it made me realise what a struggle it is to be diagnosed, what a struggle it is to get the right information. And even when you've got that, what the hell do you do if you can't get the right support and treatment? So even, you know, the next journey. So, you know, it's a bit like when you have children, you learn more from having children than any book you could read. And it's the same with the perimenopause. You know, I've learned more on my own experience than I have from going to any lectures or whatever. So, but it makes me realise how hard it is. I'm very fortunate, aren't I, that I could email an amazing consultant to help me. But lots of people can't get that. And it shouldn't be like that. It's not that difficult medicine. People should be able to receive the hormones they're missing. If I had an underactive thyroid gland, it wouldn't be such an issue. I would just get the replacement hormone very easily. And this is how it should be for women.
I feel the same way in my job as a health journalist. I have great access, and that's why I love creating these sorts of episodes, because the more women you can inform. And I mean, just to that point, actually, because I have had this mentioned in my Facebook group quite a lot, where people say they're confident that they're experiencing the menopause or perimenopause based solely on, you know, probably things that come up in the questionnaire on your website. But they go to a doctor who isn't particularly sympathetic or doesn't like prescribing HRT, and they feel incredibly frustrated. Mm. And I've had that before when I used to be on a particular medication for PCOS. I had a doctor flat out refuse to prescribe it because he didn't believe in it. Mm. And I said, well, I mean, in 2 weeks' time, you're going to see a very frazzled, different kind of a woman is sitting in front of you, because that helps me. So what do you advise women who find themselves in that predicament?
I think the most important thing as women is to be empowered. Certainly when I was a junior doctor in the early 90s and at medical school in the 80s, it was very much about more paternalistic medicine, whereas now, gladly, thankfully, it's changed. And we need to involve patients in every decision. So I think number one, before even going to a doctor, is make sure you've got information. So, you know, look at the NICE guidelines, look at the evidence, make sure that your source is correct. So you feel strong to actually ask for what you want as an individual. And it might be you just want a diagnosis. It might be that you want to discuss HRT. It might be you want to just discuss about heart disease or osteoporosis risk, but it's important to have the knowledge first. And then if your GP is refusing to engage with the thought of HRT or offering you antidepressants, for which there's very little evidence that they help the low mood associated with the perimenopause or menopause, then you should really question why your doctor's being like that. And that can be very hard. I mean, I feel nervous going to see a GP because I feel I'm wasting their time, they're running late. It's, you know, it is quite scary. So I can understand women might not want to then just push back, especially when they've got all these symptoms and they're feeling very vulnerable. There is a letter, if you put letter on the search part of my website, that we've just drafted, which basically says to the doctor, you've been so fantastic in so many ways, why can't I have HRT? And we've referenced the NICE guidance. And some women have used that, and it's not aggressive, it's not a threatening letter, but actually the doctors then have reflected and thought about it and then either seen them again or referred them to someone else in the clinic. So there's often a doctor or sometimes a nurse who has a special interest in the menopause. But sadly, menopause education for healthcare professionals is really lacking. I had no formal menopause training. I had to do it myself. And, you know, every doctor, every nurse, every pharmacist should have information and education about the menopause. And we've just developed a program which is going to be launched soon through a company called 14 Fish, which will access, it's a remote online learning for any healthcare professional to learn about the menopause. So I'm hoping this will make a really big difference because, you know, doctors are given wrong information. I've already said women are often, but sadly, every so often you see these scares about HRT, about breast cancer risk. It goes to the media, but it also goes to doctors as well. And doctors are really busy. You know, I've read so many studies, so many papers, because that's my job, to be a menopause specialist. But I haven't read all the up-to-date papers about diabetes, for example. So a GP will read the headline from the MHRA or from the Lancet or from a journal, and they will lift that out and think that's right. And sadly, especially over the last year, there's been some real misinformation going out to GPs, which understandably has been scaring them and then worrying their patients as well.
Because there's a brilliant post on your Instagram, actually. There's a recent study about HRT and the connected risk with breast cancer. And you've kind of, you did break it down and say, actually, the study's not entirely robust and there is no evidence for this.
Yes. So,
would you just mind explaining what that is a bit?
Because... No, absolutely not. I think it's really important because most women, if they're worrying about HRT, it's because they're worrying about the breast cancer risk. So it's really important to get the facts right. So most women, if they've still got their womb, have estrogen, which is the important hormone, and then they need a progesterone or a progestogen. And a progestogen is just a synthetic form of progesterone. And we need it to protect the lining of our wombs, because otherwise with estrogen, it can just build up and become thicker. So we know that there are there's a small risk of breast cancer in some types of combination HRT, i.e. estrogen and progesterone or a progestogen. So when the study came out in 2002, which was the biggest randomized control study looking at this, they were giving tablet estrogen, high strength, which we often don't give because there's a small risk of clot, but they were giving the synthetic progestogens. And they showed there was a small increased risk. And this is where all of this has come from, a small increased risk of breast cancer. But actually, when they looked at the data more closely, they found that women who only had estrogen, so without any progestogen, actually had a slightly lower risk of breast cancer. So it's not the estrogen. Everyone thinks the estrogen is the bad bit because people talk about estrogen receptor positive breast cancers. Estrogen doesn't cause breast cancer, but the type of synthetic progestogen or some types are thought that they could stimulate a growth of breast cancer cells that are there already, or they might initiate some changes, but the risk is incredibly small. If you look at the magnitude of risk, the risk is more if a woman drinks a couple of glasses of wine a night or is overweight or doesn't exercise, because these are risk factors for breast cancer. But then, so the women who take estrogen only do not have an increased risk. And also women who have an early menopause who are under the age of 45, all they're doing is replacing the hormones. So there's no increased risk of breast cancer for those women. We use in my clinic, and it's recommended throughout the NHS, the micronized progesterone, which is this body identical progesterone. And the studies have shown that there's no risk of breast cancer in the first 5 years of taking this preparation. And after that time, the risk is lower than with the synthetic progestogens. Sadly, some studies like the one that came out in September last year, 2019, in The Lancet, showed it was reviewing all the data, some published, some unpublished, saying, oh, the risk is even higher than we thought with HRT. We need to reduce it and give it this low dose, a shorter length of time. But when you look at those studies, they were all involved. Or the vast majority were involved with the older types of HRT, again, which we don't often prescribe. And it was all about risk of breast cancer. What we need to be aware also is there's never been a study that shows there's an increased risk of death in women from breast cancer in those women who take HRT. So I'm not belittling breast cancer, because obviously it's very common. 1 in 7, 1 in 8 women get it. The vast majority of women who develop breast cancer, it's not related to their HRT. We also need to bear in mind that the majority of women who have had breast cancer die from cardiovascular disease, so heart disease. We know that taking HRT reduces the risk of heart disease by about 50%. So we need to sort of take a step back and think, why are we taking HRT? Are we only taking it because of this risk of breast cancer? Of course we're not. But are we taking it because it's got a reduced risk of heart disease, osteoporosis, diabetes, dementia, and improved quality of life? Yes, actually we are. And we know even from this study with the synthetic progestogens, when they followed women up for 18 years, they found that women who took, so the older type of HRT, when they took that, they had a lower risk of death from all causes, including from cancer. So actually that speaks volumes. So you just have to interpret the data really carefully. Yeah. And when they talk about risk, you also have to be careful, because when they say double risk or triple risk, if the risk is low, you're doubling a low risk. So when I put that post about drinking covered a glass of wine is a risk of breast cancer, loads of women were messaging to say, oh my gosh, I've been drinking during lockdown, should I be worried? Well, no, the risk is really small. You know, you're more at risk by having a car crash than you are getting breast cancer from taking HRT. You know, when we go in and buy a car in the showroom, we do not get told by the salesman that there's a risk that you're going to die in a car crash. It's all about how lovely the car is. And we don't go and, well, I certainly have never, for the cars I've bought, you know, look at studies and see, has there been a randomized controlled trial? No, of course there hasn't. You know, you buy the car because you like it, you can afford it, you want to get somewhere, but there is a risk every time we get behind a wheel or cross a road or, you know, anything in our life. But we look at why we're doing it and the benefits from doing it. That's a very long answer to your question, but no, I hope that's helped.
I enjoy that very much, and I do enjoy the car showroom analogy too. I am enjoying that hugely. So actually, I want to come on to something I feel like I'm really...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Like, I'm properly up to my waders in this now, but you mentioned synthetic, and then you also talked about body identical. Mm. When you say body identical, is that the same as bioidentical?
No. Mm. So this is really good to bring up, because it's very important that people know the difference. So synthetic progestogens are modified, so they're not, if you look at their molecular structure, they're different to the hormones we produce. But the body identical hormones, the estrogen, progesterone, and also testosterone that some women take, if they're body identical, they're basically the same molecular structure, so they work the same in the body as our natural hormones. Now, if they are regulated, then some people call them regulated bioidentical, which is a bit confusing. So we tend to just say they're body identical. So they're usually available on the NHS. They're very cheap. They're very effective. That's where all the studies have been to show how good they are. Now, these clinics I mentioned before that do compounded bioidentical HRT, they are essentially body identical. They're the same structure, but they're not regulated. They come under as a food supplement, so they don't have to have the same quality control measures. So I could set up a clinic, for example. I could get someone to compound and make these products for me. But firstly, I don't know how safe they are. I don't even know what their quantities of the hormones are. Each packet could be different, whereas when it's regulated, every product that's prescribed, every packet will contain exactly the same, have exactly the same checks, because it has to, it's a medicine. So the the way that they're marketed is very clever. So they say it's bespoke. It's we match your hormones. We do blood tests. We do saliva tests and all this. So say, for example, I had gone a few years ago to one of these clinics. Well, they would have done a saliva and blood test. I don't want my hormones to be how they were then because they would have been dreadful. I want them how they were 10 years ago. But as I've already said, I couldn't have measured them 10 years ago because each day would have been different. But we know what a physiological level is. So we can monitor blood tests for women who take HRT. But to make a diagnosis, we don't. We don't need a blood test. So they're expensive. They're not regulated. They could contain contaminants. We've done some analysis of some samples and they've not even contained what we think they contain or what they're telling that they're contained. The reason that they came on board really is because women were so scared about HRT for reasons I've already said. Mm-hmm. And they are no doubt better than the synthetic older type tablet estrogen and the synthetic progestogens. But compared to body identical, they haven't got the literature. They haven't done the trials. What they will do is tell you how bad HRT is because, of course, HRT has moved on and changed. And so compared to the synthetic progestogens and oral estrogen, they are probably better. But a lot of women, they just don't need it. And it's, we see people that come to my clinic and they've been fleeced, really, is probably the best word of think it, for lots of money. You know, their credit card goes out on arrival. They have spent a fortune on blood tests, a fortune on these hormones. And yes, they will feel better because a lot of these products contain estrogen and a lot of them contain progesterone and testosterone. So, of course, these women will feel better. But it's not done in a regulated way. It's not done. There's no body. So there's the International Menopause Society, British Menopause Society, the North American Menopause Society. None of them recommend compounded bioidentical HRT because there's no evidence behind it. But it's a massive industry. In America, it's a multi-billion pound dollar industry. And it's big. In London, it's very big. Places everywhere. But also, doctors don't have the training. It's often linked with cosmetic doctors. So you can have your Botox, have your compounded HRT. And it's shocking. It's really sad because a lot of people are making, or not a lot, but some doctors are making a huge amount of money from very vulnerable women, and they're not practicing evidence-based medicine.
Well, so, the back of my neck has got very hot and sweaty because I have previously said to listeners, in good faith and thinking I'm giving fair information, if you feel that you're hitting a brick wall, and because I did this, make an investment in yourself and go and see someone who can guide you. And the financial investment is an investment in you, so it's never going to be a bad investment. But from what you've just said, I'm now thinking, should my advice be go to your GP and ask for body identical hormone and have a reasonable conversation with them before you escalate to a clinic?
Absolutely. I think I've written an easy HRT prescribing guide for healthcare professionals, which a lot of women have downloaded. Actually, if you just search easy on the questionnaire, on the search tool of my website, if you put easy, it will come up, this easy HRT prescribing guide. A lot of women have downloaded that and actually given it to their doctors, which have been helpful. There are some private clinics that offer regulated hormones. So it's just important finding out the training of the doctor or the nurse that you're going to. But if it's compounded bioidentical HRT, you should really be asking yourself why you're taking it.
How would you know if it was compounded bioidentical HRT?
Well, they'll be able to tell you. Firstly, it's very expensive. If it's expensive and they're offering lots of blood tests, then you shouldn't be doing it. And certainly if they're offering saliva tests, you shouldn't be doing that either. They also give, a lot of times, they give progesterone creams that you rub on. And I've already said you need progesterone to protect the lining of your womb. There is no evidence at all that progesterone cream will protect the lining of the womb. So we see a lot of women who have bleeding. I saw a lady recently in my clinic who had cancer of the lining of the womb, and she'd been given a progesterone cream with her estrogen from one of these clinics. And estrogen on its own will stimulate the lining of the womb. So you just have to be really careful.
Oh, gosh. Sorry, I don't think I understood that last example. So do you think that the prescribed estrogen and progesterone she was taking contributed to the cancer of the
light? It could have been. It's impossible to prove. Obviously, right. She could have had cancer already, but there's a lot of women who have bleeding because the lining of the womb is building up because the progesterone through the skin doesn't get absorbed properly to protect the lining of the womb. Whereas if you have it as a progesterone capsule orally, or it can be used internally, we know from evidence that it's safe. And, you know, as doctors, we should be prescribing the evidence-based medicine. We should be looking at the available evidence and working out of that, regardless, not just with menopause, with diabetes, blood pressure, heart disease, anything we do. Mm. We'd have no evidence. There's nothing that will tell you or tell me as a doctor that a compounded bioidentical HRT is effective and safe.
Right. So and with the synthetic hormones, and I will just linger on this point only one more time. I always thought it was bioidentical hormones good, synthetic hormones bad, and that synthetic was, for example, like taking the combined oral contraceptive.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right.
So just, and listeners will know this, but I stopped taking the contraceptive pill as a treatment for PCOS because I freaked out because my mother developed breast cancer 7 years ago, and there was no family history. And after an analysis, they said the only thing that might have tipped you over the edge is the fact that you've been taking HRT for such a long time. And so I immediately thought synthetic hormones, and mine went in the bin, and I haven't taken them since. Was that a bit knee-jerk, Louise?
It's, you know, it's getting it all into perspective. There's certainly the contraceptive pills have a higher risk of breast cancer than body identical HRT. Yet people take them all the time. But then a woman's risk of getting breast cancer, developing breast cancer when she's young, is really low. So this is what I said before. If you increase a low risk, it's still a really low risk. Mm. A lot of women with PCOS take something called Dianet, which has no risk of breast cancer because it has something that blocks testosterone. It doesn't have a synthetic progesterone in it. So so the estrogen, like I've said, is the safe bit. So if all women taking the contraceptive pill had a high increased risk of breast cancer, you'd see a massive spike of women in their 20s, 30s. We have to remember that the commonest reason for developing cancers, including breast cancer, is the commonest risk factor is obesity. Obesity has overtaken smoking as the commonest risk for all cancers. So if you look at these modifiable, if you like, lifestyle factors, they include obesity, drinking alcohol, and not exercising. Now, a lot of women who are perimenopausal and menopausal change their diet because they get sugar cravings, they feel no motivation to cook, to eat properly. They put on weight anyway because of the metabolic changes that occur due to the low estrogen levels. And they often, women tell me they're drinking more just to numb their symptoms, to try and help them sleep. Mm. So they're saying, I don't want HRT because of the breast cancer risk. But their lifestyle means that their risk of breast cancer is greater than taking most types of HRT. Wow. So, you know, we have to work out what we're doing with our lives before we just say no to a hormone.
Now, I'm going to go off on a wee tangent there because you mentioned obesity as now being the highest risk. Mm. And the tangent I'm going to go on is that that's become quite controversial with the body positivity movement. Mm. And I have seen, and obviously it's always on social media where things are not fact-checked. Sorry, that's such a sweeping statement, which I shouldn't have said, but obviously not everything you read on social media is true. But with lots of people saying that the health risks associated with obesity just aren't true, and it's a form of fat shaming. And I'm interested if you have a stance on that.
I don't think anyone's going to fat shame, are they? I think it's all about how comfortable you are in your skin, in your body, in your lifestyle. You know, I have a very extreme lifestyle because I don't drink caffeine or alcohol, so I don't eat chocolate. Now, most women would never be able to do that, and I would never advise people to do that. It's the same, you know, with weight as well. You've got to do what's right for you and ignore everyone else, because if you listen to everyone, you wouldn't you wouldn't live. You know, whatever we do, certainly as women, we're very vulnerable. And anyway, that's another subject,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
we know from data that people who, men and women, who are overweight or obese have a higher risk of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, osteoporosis, and they also have an increased risk of all types of cancer. That's just fact.
Yeah.
And so we also know that women, when they have low estrogen levels, they tend to put on weight, especially around the middle, because the fat cells in our bodies contain a very weak type of estrogen called estrone. And our bodies want estrogen. We are designed to have estrogen. If you think in the Victorian times, we used to die quite soon after our menopause. So evolutionary, we're designed to reproduce and then fade away and die. We're not designed to have decades of life in our menopausal years. So women tend to put on weight and have an increased risk of being overweight and obese because of the low estrogen levels that occur. And then we know that there are associated. Now, there's obviously, if people are overweight or obese and they eat well and they exercise, of course they're going to be healthier than people that sit on the sofa eating chips, smoking 20 a day. It's not just a single risk factor, but it's a contributing factor, if you see what I mean.
On this podcast, I do enjoy evidence-based medicine. I don't, you know, that's very much, I always like to back it up with fact and science and maybe the odd clinical review or peer-reviewed paper. And so really, I just wanted a doctor, that's you, to say, yes, it isn't a conspiracy, it isn't a myth. There is proven evidence, there is evidence that there can be an implication. And the this sort of obesity, I'm getting lost in my words, but what I mean is there's this whole thing about healthy at any size, and I think you've touched on that, but there is a risk, and that isn't to be ignored or dismissed as a conspiracy.
Absolutely. And I think it's even more apparent now with COVID-19, because we know that one of the risk factors for developing severe symptoms of COVID-19 and also going to intensive care and sadly dying, one of the big risk factors is obesity. So we can't get away from that either.
Yes. Now, so if someone is in there experiencing perimenopausal symptoms, because I've had this said to me before, and I know listeners have, where you go to the doctor and they say, if you can just lose 5% of your body weight, your symptoms will improve.
Yeah, well, they need to try and be menopausal themselves or perimenopausal themselves, because when I had symptoms, I've always been fairly slim, but I try and look after myself, and I could just see that I had this sort of extra weight around my middle, and I kept driving, looking down, thinking, where that's come from? I haven't changed my lifestyle. This is awful. And looking back, obviously, it's because of my hormones, but also, you know, you've got these metabolic changes that are occurring, and then you've got these changes I've already said to your brain, to your body. You know, if you're exhausted because you've been awake in the night and you've got low self-esteem, reduced sort of self-values, you've got joint pains, muscle pains, you've got headaches, you're irritable, you're not eating properly, it's really hard to then just lose weight. You know, I remember a while ago I was doing some judging of a perimenopause app that somebody had developed for a competition, and these really young guys were talking about diet and exercise and being personal trainers for perimenopausal women, and say it's so easy, they just need to exercise 5 times a week, we can give them a diet sheet, la la la. I said, have you ever spoken to anyone who's experienced symptoms? Oh no, but we know it works really well for 20-30 years. I said, you've got no idea. And actually the last thing a menopausal woman wants to hear is that she has to lose weight. A lot of women will lose weight if they're on the right dose and type of HRT, because it's just so much easier to exercise when you feel well. We know that. You know, it's hard for a lot of people to get the motivation to exercise. And, you know, it's really hard for menopausal women. So I feel if a doctor or healthcare professional is saying that, they need to really consider why they're saying that.
Because there, it's even during a regular cycle before perimenopause or menopause, there will be a time, a few days maybe in your normal cycle, where it will be hard to dig deep and find that motivation just by the very nature of hormone fluctuations, right?
Absolutely. And it's classically just before a period that this occurs, and this is when estrogen levels are very low. So a lot of women who get that dip, especially when the dip gets worse and for longer, they've got PMS, and during the perimenopause people with PMS, it often gets a lot worse. And the only really good thing about that is that these women often really respond to just topping up with some estrogen, sometimes only on those few days. They don't need full-on HRT. They can just take the estrogen for 2, 3, 4 days or a week, you know, when their symptoms are bad, because you're just topping it up. That's all you're doing.
Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about mental health, because obviously perimenopause, menopause, very much a physical health issue. But we know that, and we never shied away from talking about anxiety on this podcast with my most excellent listeners. So, but there is a link, isn't there? It can really, if you're already experiencing anxiety, it can perhaps amplify it. And if you haven't necessarily experienced anxiety before, it can trigger it for the first time.
Yeah, absolutely. We know that anxiety and depression are really, really common anyway. They're more common in women, and women during the perimenopause have a lot higher risk of both anxiety and clinical depression as well. We also know, really sadly, that the peak suicide rate in the UK for women is in their early 50s. And I've already said the average age of the menopause is 51. And I have spoken to and seen a huge number of women who have had suicidal thoughts. Their lives have just felt not worth living, not worth continuing. They've really been at the top of that cliff wanting to jump, and they have improved with the right dose and type of HRT. So I know it's related to their hormone. And a lot of women are inappropriately given antidepressants, which I've alluded to already. Mm. We know there's no evidence that antidepressants help with the low mood associated with the perimenopause and menopause. Clearly, they will help for people with clinical depression, but they won't help if it's a hormone-related anxiety or depression. So we see so many women and hear really sad stories. And, you know, someone recently got in touch with me because she and her friend had been going through the menopause at the same time. And this woman had thankfully received help, but the other woman was only given antidepressants. And sadly, she jumped off a bridge and killed herself. And her friend just contacted me to tell me about it, but said, I really feel bad because I'm the one that managed to get treatment. And it sounds very dramatic, but actually it's not, because I hear stories all the time, and it's really sad. It's inexcusable. These are avoidable deaths that we need to address. And one of my patients works for Samaritans, and she said since she'd gone through her own perimenopausal journey, she now realizes so much that so many of the people that are calling the women are perimenopausal and menopausal. This is what I was saying. It's the mental health effects of low hormones are huge, and we need to talk about it so we know and can recognize it in our friends, in our colleagues, in our, you know, in our relatives. So, because when you're in it yourself, you don't notice a change so much.
Yeah. And I hope for anyone listening who is ticking a lot of boxes or is hearing a lot of ding, 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 I hope this offers comfort, because there's nothing wrong with you. You're not doing anything wrong. This is a process that you are going through, and this is something that is going to happen, but it can be treated there's appropriate intervention available. Let's talk a little bit about the symptoms, just maybe to do a little bit of a checklist of the things that you might feel during perimenopause. So there is the poor recall that you've spoken about, anxiety, brain fog. And then I also read on your Instagram, one of the other things you might notice is an increase in urination.
Yes. Yeah, so we've got estrogen receptors in cells everywhere. So they get all around our body. So obviously we've talked a lot about in our brain, but also in our heart, in our lungs even, in our bones, in our eyes. Some people get dry eyes, dry mouth. But we have estrogen receptors in our vagina, the walls lining the vagina, and also our vulval area, but also in parts of our bladder and the urethra, the tube that we wee out, and also our pelvic floor. So you don't have to be a brain surgeon to work out that low levels is going to affect all of these regions. Mm. So a lot of women find that they have increased frequency of passing urine, urgency. Sometimes they have some incontinence, might not be a full on, but they might have some leakage. Mm. And it's, you know, when you look at statistics, probably about 1 in 3 women will have some sort of incontinence, yet hardly anyone gets treatment because it's so embarrassing to talk about. And of course it's not embarrassing to talk about to a doctor, but it's pelvic floor weakness occurs. And then a lot of people get recurrent urinary tract infections as well. So all these treatments that can help, obviously HRT can help, but also women who choose not to take HRT or don't want to take it first line or can't take it because of a medical reason can have local estrogen. So this is estrogen that's used internally as a pessary in the vagina, or there's a ring or a cream. And then, it, as you can imagine, it seeps out. It helps the vagina, but it also helps the urinary symptoms as well. So it's very safe. There's no risks associated with it because it just works locally. And we know around 70% of women have symptoms related to vaginal dryness, and so they will have urinary symptoms as well. But we also know, sadly, only about 7% of women receive treatment. So there's a heck of a lot of women out there who are just putting up with it.
7%.
It's awful.
That really makes me feel so sad.
I know. It's a very depressing podcast, this.
No, it's not. It's hopeful. because we're providing listeners with an excellent resource of information. So it's incredibly hopeful and comforting. I also wanted to, because a listener actually got in touch with me a little while ago, and I thought, oh gosh, I have no idea how to broach this, but you are the perfect person. They have been put into, I don't know if that's the right terminology, surgical menopause. Mm. So very early because of an operation, and were just kind of like, I don't have any resources to access to know how to navigate this. But yeah, I believe memory serves she had a hysterectomy. And so surgical menopause.
So surgical menopause occurs usually because the ovaries are removed, because then obviously you've got your hormones and suddenly your ovaries are removed and your hormone levels really deplete very quickly. Some people do develop it from a simple hysterectomy where their ovaries are left. But a lot of women, if their ovaries are still there, they still got some function. But the surgical menopause is a very harsh, very unnatural menopause because it happens so quickly, the body can't adjust at all. Often it occurs in younger women. The majority of people are under the age of 45, so therefore they really need hormones. So the guidelines are very clear that if a woman is going to have ovaries removed and also having a hysterectomy, they should speak with their specialist before the operation to explore options of HRT. A lot of women I speak to sadly get told by their surgeon, well, let's just see how you go and then we can think about hormones. Well, you don't see how anyone goes. You wouldn't take out their thyroid gland and see how they go. So it's very important they get help. There is a podcast that I've done on my podcast series about surgical menopause that we've just talked
about. Oh, I'll put that
in the show notes. And also on my Instagram TV, I've done I think it's an hour, me talking nonstop about surgical menopause because it's very important. Mm-hmm. And I also talked about endometriosis in that because that's one reason why women have surgery. But there's lots of reasons and it's really important. I see a lot of women who have had a surgical menopause from cancer, for example, if they've had cervical cancer of the cervix, and they've had their womb, their ovaries, everything removed. Often they've had chemotherapy or radiotherapy. And so they have gone into the menopause very early, and these women can still take HRT. So again, there's lots of information under the resources section about women who've had cancer, because a lot of these women are really neglected. A lot of treatments for cancer induce an early menopause, yet it's not spoken about to these poor women.
And you also mentioned endometriosis there, and that's something I have quite a few friends who really, really suffer with it. And I just am curious in terms of the implications of having something like endometriosis and then what that means, whether it has any impact on the kind of menopause you will have or the kind of perimenopause you might have.
Not necessarily, but it's important to realise that you can still take HRT. A lot of women think that they can't if they've had endometriosis because they know that their oestrogen can sometimes flare up any endometrial tissue that's still in their bodies. These women should have progesterone as well to protect the lining of the womb. A lot of women, even if they've had a hysterectomy, if they've got deposits of endometriosis, if you like, elsewhere, then we still give them progesterone. So again, there is a leaflet about endometriosis on my website that people can download and read. But no, I mean, all women go through the menopause, and some women have really severe symptoms. Some women don't have any symptoms. But what we have to remember is that it's a long-term female hormone deficiency. So, for example, I could stop my HRT tomorrow and all my symptoms that I did have might have gone, but then I'm exposing my body to this risk of osteoporosis, heart disease and so forth. So that's the reason that we need to think about it as a hormone deficiency rather than menopause or perimenopause, because they're such horrible words. You know, when you think about menopause, you think about a grey-haired lady running down the beach with her grandchildren. You know, I'm not that. I don't want to be thought of like that. And certainly young women don't want to either. So we have to sort of change the perception of it, really.
Yeah, that's totally correct. A hormone deficiency. It's like, I need to talk, like, I'm vitamin deficient. We don't get embarrassed about that. We just go and get some vitamin D. If you had in your teen years a wobbly puberty, like the transition from child to woman, from girl to woman, might that inform how you experience menopause? And is it also true, because I've heard this many times, that you experience menopause probably in a similar way to your mother?
Yes and no. So sometimes people are very sensitive to hormones. So if they've had a turbulent time in their teenagers, it could be. But also certainly women who have PMS, premenstrual syndrome, have often a lot worse time during the perimenopause and menopause. And if women have been pregnant and they often say, I felt amazing when I was pregnant, then that's an indication that they will respond even better to HRT. What your mother experienced is not going to be, and actually a lot of mothers won't remember what their experience was. A lot of women tell me that their mother says, now I breathe through the menopause, and they say, but I remember you going down the garden screaming your head off, you know, shouting all the time. So but the age of the menopause can do so. There are I've already said women go through the menopause early, so around 1 in 100 women in the UK under the age of 40 have an early menopause, and often that can run in families. So if you're perimenopausal or menopausal in your 20s, 30s, just ask around your female relatives whether what age they were, and that might give you an indication. It's not guaranteed, but it might just give you an indication.
Well, thank you so much. I know we've come to the end of our time together because you are very busy, but thank you so much for that, because that was an incredible, that was an info-packed conversation, Liz. Thank you so much for your time. And also, obviously, you mentioned the resources on your website, and just we will flag up, you do have an app launching. It will be launched by the time this podcast goes out, so I'll put a link to that too.
Which is very exciting. So it's a free app available for anyone to download. Yeah.
And what's it called?
It's called Balance.
Okay, I'll put the link.
It's about balancing your hormones and your health.
And I think as well, like you said, monitoring your cycle. Like, I use an app. I guess it's just a case of just transposing that to monitoring your perimenopause or menopause or your hormone deficiency, as we are now going to be calling it.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me. It's been great.
Thank you so much for your time. It was a pleasure to chat.
Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to get in touch with the show, please do email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com. You know how much I love to hear from you. You can always slide into my DMs, and I do enjoy that also, where I'm at Emma Guns. That's on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to chat to me, but also thousands of other listeners to this podcast, I encourage you to click the link in the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode, and join the Facebook group. The link to join is right there. You just have to answer a couple of questions, agree to the forum rules, and you will be welcomed in with open arms. Thank you so much for listening. I will see you on the next one.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.